So this is text 8 that has no purport, and we'll just officially recite it back and forth a couple times, and then I'll go to text number 9 that has nice purport. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Angushta Matram Amalam.
Angushta Matram Amalam.
Spurat Purata Maulinam. Apivya Darshanam Shamam. Tadivasasam Achutam. Agushtamatram Amalam. Spurat Purata Maulinam. Apivya Darshanam Shamam. Tadid Vasasam Achutam. Translation: He, the Lord, was only thumb high, but he was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body, and he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus he was seen by the child. And text number 9 that has a purport. Śrīmad-dhīrga-catur-bāhum-tapa-kanchana-kundalam-kṣatta-jākṣam-gadā-pānīm-ātmana-sarvato-diśam Pari-brahmatam-pari-brahmantam Ulkabham Brahmayantam Gada. Moho. Translation: The Lord was enriched with 4 hands, earrings of molten gold, the same as his helmet, and eyes blood red with fury, because Maharaj Pariksit was being attacked. As he loitered about, paribhramatam, he loitered about. His club constantly encircled him like a shooting star. Quite an image, huh? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is said in the Brahma Samhita chapter 5 that the Supreme Lord Govinda, by his plenary portion, enters into the halo of the universe and distributes himself as Paramatma, or the Supersoul, not only within the heart of every living being but also within every atom of the material elements. Thus, the Lord is all-pervading by his inconceivable potency, and thus he entered the womb of Uttara to save his beloved devotee Maharaj Pariksit. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:31, the Lord assured everyone that his devotee will never be vanquished. No one can kill a devotee of the Lord because he is protected by the Lord, and no one can save a person whom the Lord desires to kill. The Lord is all-powerful, and therefore he can both save and kill as he likes. He became visible to his devotee, Maharaj Pariksit, even in that awkward position, parentheses, in the womb of his mother, in a shape just suitable for his vision. The Lord can become bigger than thousands of universes and can become smaller than an atom at the same time. Not back and forth. Merciful as he is, he becomes just suitable to the vision of the limited living being. He is unlimited. He is not limited by any measurement of our calculation. He can become bigger than what we can think of, and he can become smaller than what we can conceive. But in all circumstances, he is the same, all-powerful Lord. There is no difference between the thumb-like Vishnu in the womb of Uttara and the full-fledged Narayana in the Vaikuntha Dham, the kingdom of Godhead. He accepts the form of Archa Vigraha, worshipable deity, just to accept service from his different incapable devotees. That's us, by the way. By the mercy of the Archa Vigraha, the form of the Lord in the material, in material elements, the devotees who are in the material world can easily approach the Lord, although he is not conceivable by the material senses. The Archa Vigraha is therefore an all spiritual form of the Lord to be perceived by the material devotees. That's us. Such an Archa Vigraha of the Lord is never to be considered material. There is no difference between matter and spirit for the Lord, although there is a gulf of difference between the two in the case of the conditioned living being. For the Lord, there is nothing but spiritual existence, and similarly, there is nothing except spiritual existence for the pure devotee of the Lord in his intimate relationship with the Lord. Whew, what a purport. So yesterday we heard to protect the child of Uttara within the womb of Uttara, upon her appeal for Krishna to do that, to protect the child, Krishna appeared in the womb of Uttara, thumb size, and his appearance, the features of his spiritual form are described in these two verses. Specifically, I'm surprised Prabhupada doesn't elucidate or elaborate on his eyes blood red with fury. Now his body is not material. We have material bodies, and we get furious, you know, the capillaries expand and our eyes become red. He doesn't have capillaries. We know this from, he has no veins. We know this from Ishapanishad. But nonetheless, so this is a dim reflection, a perverted reflection of that, and his eyes are angry. His eyes are showing his anger, reddish in color. And his club is moving very fast. We know that Sudarshan Chakra in Govardhan Leela, as the inundation from Indra was coming down so heavy, just like this thick column holding up the ceiling, that the rain was coming down in columns. It wasn't like monsoon season where it's really heavy rain. It was something extraordinary. And there was flooding everywhere. So when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, how come the water didn't go underneath where the hill was? Well, one explanation that's given is Sudarshan was moving so fast, with such heat, water couldn't enter. So at the end, Sudarshan was tired. He requested the Lord, I need a little rest, transcendental pastime. And so he took rest at a certain place, Chakaleshwara, Tila, little hill, and took some rest right by the side of Madasi Ganga. So as Sudarshan was moving that fast, the club was moving fast, and to protect the child from the Brahmastra, so the Brahmastra was repelled by the Lord's potency. Of course, he could have done it however he wanted to do it. That's how he chose to do it. Moving his club very in circles, very, very, very fast, like a shooting star. Very fast. That's the picture of his appearance and then the purport. So in the purport, Prabhupada right away refers to Sri Brahma Samhita, and having spent like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours poring over Sri Brahma Samhita, I'd like to share a little bit just specific to what's being spoken here, where he says the Supreme Lord Govinda, by his one plenary portion, enters the halo of the universe. And distributes himself as Paramatma. So there's two sections specifically that one is that I speak this in Brahma Samhita. One is, of course, in the Govinda prayers. But prior to that, that part that we normally don't read so much and it's like confusing, I'm going to read to you and then unpack it a little bit. Hopefully this little device works. There we go. So this is text 19 and 20. Those of you got your little handheld devices, you can pull it out. I'll just read it. And then, you know, it's Bhakti Siddhanta's dictionary language. Then I'll explain what he's saying. The prior verses are describing the glance of Mahavishnu, the glance carrying time energy and the living entities. And when the time energy and the spiritual spark, living entities, contact Pradhan, Pradhan starts to differentiate into elements, because before it's undifferentiated. So the 24 elements manifest. And so now we have like a lot of elements. And seemingly like chronologically inconsequential, the Lord exhales, and within the pores of his skin are golden seeds. They're not universes yet, they're seeds of a universe. And as he exhales, those seeds of the universe enter into this Mahatattva, and the elements, the gross elements in particular, they congeal but don't conglomerate. Like they cling to and thus enlarge the seeds, but they're not mixing properly yet. So you can have, you know, a universe. So he uses, Bhaktisiddhanta in his translation uses this conglomerating principle, which shows up in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, where the same thing is in parallel is described, you'll find this at the end of chapter 5 in canto 3, where the clinging elements and their prototype demigods, because not the demigods of the universe, because we don't have a universe yet, we just have elements. So they're controlling deities of the elements, in Bhaktisiddhanta's language, prototype demigods. They pray to the Supreme Lord, help, we can't cooperate together, I've got my function, he's got his function, help. Because we know your desire, Mahavishnu, they're praying to, you desire to have a universe for the living entities that are now invested within this Mahatattva, you want them to have an opportunity to experience their ultimate happiness through devotional service. But we can't get it together, so please help. So the beginning of chapter 6 of Canto 3, the Lord, hearing their prayer, responds by, in the language of the purport here, entering into the halo of the universe. That is like, you know, this golden seed with elements clinging and enlarging the seed. So he enters as Shiradakshay Vishnu. Mahavishnu first expands as Shiradakshay Vishnu along with his conglomerating potency. And in this case, she's known as Kali, but not, you know, the Kali of the universe. It's this potency of the Supreme Lord who's like Rama Devi's expansion, still his conglomerating potency. The commentary explains she's called Kali because of her capacity to combine or conglomerate. So here's now, that's Canto 3, Chapter 6. Here's Brahma Samhita, text number 19. Translation. Before their conglomeration, properly combining, the primary elements in their nascent state remained originally separate entities. This kind of clinging to the seed of the universe, but not working together. Non-application of the conglomerating process is the cause of their separate existence. In other words, the Supreme Lord has yet to do one function. Until he does that function, there's no creation. Notice the material scientist of chemical evolution is refuted by Brahma Samhita. Divine Mahavishnu. So he saw the problem that the presiding deities of those elements prayed. Divine Mahavishnu, primal Godhead, through association with his spiritual chit potency, chit is in brackets. So Mahavishnu is associating with Rama Devi, his spiritual potency. He, Mahavishnu, moved Maya and by the application of the conglomerating principle, so back to Canto 3, Chapter 6, Kali, or the conglomerating potency of the Supreme Lord, by application of the conglomerating principle, created those different entities in their state of cooperation. What's not spoken here is spoken in Canto 3, Chapter 6, is not only his conglomerating potency, or Kala Shakti, because it's the time energy again, second time, because Kali is also, you look carefully at the purport and the commentaries, it's time, because things don't happen without time, without the conglomerating principle. But it's his internal potency along with Shiradakshay Vishnu. He enters within every atom of the elements and then they can combine through the agency. But he doesn't do it. It's through the agency of his energy. Okay? Divine Mahavishnu, primal Godhead, through association with his own spiritual or chit potency, moved Maya, and by the application of the conglomerating principle created those different entities in their state of cooperation. And after that, he himself consorted with Yoga Nidra by way of his eternal dalliance with his spiritual chit potency. So he did that. Shirdakshay Vishnu entered within every atom of Mahatattva, and they're combined, clinging to the outside of these universes. So Shirdakshay Vishnu is there along with the conglomerating principle. And what does he do? He's in Yoga Nidra. And Yoga Nidra means Rama Devi is not outside, but she's inside. And internally, he's enjoying his eternal pastimes with her. By way of eternal dalliance with his spiritual chit potency. So that's 19. And then 20. By conglomerating all those separate entities, he manifested the innumerable mundane universes and himself entered into the innermost recess of every extended conglomerate. So as he entered as Garbhadakshay Vishnu. So first was Shirdakshay Vishnu, then Garbhadakshay Vishnu. At that time, those jivas who had lain dormant during the cataclysm were awakened, which means, so purport, the word guha, or hidden cavity, bears various interpretations in the shastras. Anyway, Garbhadakshay Vishnu entered within the cavity of the universe. And you know, then other things happened. He perspired and half the universe filled. So that's the detail, unpacking this little statement from the purport for this morning. It is said in the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, that the Supreme Lord Govinda, by his one plenary portion, enters into the halo of the universe and distributes himself as Paramam, or the Supersoul, not only within the heart of every living, but also within every atom of the material elements. So the second reference, that's the process of creation, and then Lord Brahma has realized these things, he then expresses it in his Govinda prayers. So that prayer being referenced here is Eko Pyaso Rachayatam Jagadanda Kotim Jagadanda Kotim Kotishva Shesha. Chakirasti Jagadanda Chaya Yadanta Adanta Rasta Paramano Chayanta Rastam Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. So Parama Anu Chaya. Parama Anu Chaya is translated as the atoms. And Antara Stam, he enters. So specifically, he enters within every atom. And going back to those verses 19-20, that's the description of his doing it. So those one plenary portion, or actually it's kala, it's the portion of a plenary portion, he does all these things. But his, so the Purusha avatars are for that purpose, and they're expansions of Govinda. Now, so the next sentence, having explained that, or referenced that from Brahma Samhita, Prabhupada then writes, thus the Lord is all-pervading by his inconceivable potency, and thus he entered the womb of Uttara to save his beloved devotee Maharaj Parikshit. So, what does this mean? The Lord is all-pervading by his inconceivable potency. There are many ways by which the Lord is all-pervading. There's at least three. He's all-pervading by his Paramatma presence. He's all-pervading, at least in his material realm, by the presence of his potencies. He's all-pervading by the presence of Brahman, because the cloud of Mahatattva is resting within Brahman. Or where are we right now? We're resting in Brahman. Yes? Although we're not tuned into the Brahman channel, we're tuned into the material element channel. We're identifying, in fact, although we're although exactly in the language of Srimad Bhagavatam, although we're transcendental, we're identifying with matter. We're qualitatively one with Brahman, but we've forgotten that fact and we're identifying ourselves with the elements, the temporary body, the covering, gross and subtle. We're identifying like that. Wrongly, falsely, illusely. We're under the influence of Maya, thinking in that way. But so the Lord is all-pervading in its Brahman feature, in the expansion of His energy, because everywhere His energy, including matter, there's also, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, living entities are everywhere. Where are there not living entities? Even in the Brahma Jyoti, there's living entities. It's just teeming with living entities in this suspended state. And here there's living entities everywhere. And in the spiritual world, there's living entities everywhere. So He's all-pervasive through His energies. He's all-pervasive through His Brahman presence. And He's all-pervasive through His Paramatma feature within every atom of creation. He's like triple all-pervasive. Inconceivable potency indicates that he does this at the same time he's existing in Goloka. His portion of a plenary portion, Mahavishnu, is so big that from his pore holes of his skin come universes. That's a big body. Who can imagine how big is the body of Mahavishnu? Inconceivably big. Even if it's a seed, still it's not, I mean, the universes come from his body, the seeds of the universes. So he's big, at the same time he's within the atom. And by Vedic definition, what's an atom? Not the same as what modern science says atoms are. The Vedic definition of an atom is the smallest indivisible, not further dividable particle of matter. That's what an atom is. And Krishna is within that. He's smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest at the same time. So, supposing there's a yogi that can become big or a yogi that can become small. But can the yogi become big and small at the same time? But Krishna can become bigger than biggest and smaller than the smallest. Not, you know, the language has become, but he already is. Bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest at the same time. And the language of Brahma Samhita is, at the same time, he maintains his medium size. Medium size indicating his human-like, because in contrast with big and small, there's the human size. And at the same time, eat the smallest and the biggest and the human size and the thumb size and the child being carried by Putana and Krishna who KO'd Kamsa with one punch. He who was the terror of the universe, the scourge, so powerful. He was, anyway, Kamsa was the demigods. Were afraid of him, as they were afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Just one. And with Hiranyakashipu, Lord Nrisimhadev played with him and made it look like, oh, there's a real battle going on. Krishna didn't waste any time, just one punch, he was finished. At the same time, inconceivable potency. So the beauty of his features are described, but as we hear the beauty of those features, that's just the exhibition of his kindness and in an appropriate size for the child within the womb to see, 6 inches or thumb size. Just because he was too big, couldn't see, too small, he couldn't see, just the right size. But all potent, all of the potencies of Krishna are there. in that form. As we also say, all the potencies of Krishna are within each and every one of his names. No exaggeration. Lord Chaitanya's teaching. Nijasarva Shaktis. In each and every name. Unlimited names, like Krishna, Govinda, etc. And in each and every name, fullness. How can you measure that? Think of, you know, one of the most powerful things in cosmic manifestation is the sun. How much power is there in the sun? Who can imagine? But the sun expires when the universe expires. And that's just, you know, a part of the unlimitedness of Krishna's material energies. And then there's all of his spiritual energies, and all of those potencies are there in each and every one of Krishna's names. So Prabhupada doesn't go to the name of Krishna, he goes to the deity form of Krishna. And for those, he doesn't have like very flattering things to say about the incapable devotees. That's us. The deity form is exhibited as a merciful form, so we can worship that deity form. And the non-devotees can't understand it. They don't have a clue. They got a big problem, in fact, with deity worship. But the devotees, on the authority of Scripture, approach the deity form and receive transcendental spiritual benefit, even in the conditioned stage, by approaching and performing the same activities that are performed in the perfect realm, Goloka or Vaikuntha realm, serving the form of the Lord. How is this explanation given? There's no difference between matter and spirit as far as the Lord is concerned. So, therefore, because it's his potency, we see distinction, and the action of those energies, like this column over here, or the verse board over here, it's just inert matter. But when the Supreme Lord, in an authorized manner, elements that are authorized according to Scripture and procedures for creating the deity and approaching the deity and serving the deity, Krishna is present. It's a science. And one who follows the science in the authorized manner, the fullness of the same activity that's performed in the spiritual realm is accessible for the incapable devotee. He has another nice... the material devotees. And it helps us establish our relationship of loving service, deity worship. Now, one last thing. Here's a quiz question. Maybe give multiple choice. From where did that form that appeared before Maharaj Parikshit come? A. From the heart of Maharaj Parikshit. B. From the heart of Uttara. C. From the spiritual world. D. It doesn't matter. And similarly, where did he go to when he disappeared? Did he go back into the heart of Maharaj Parikshit? Did he go back into the heart of Uttara? Did he go back to the spiritual world, the abode of Shiradakshai Vishnu, Sweta Dweep? Or it doesn't matter? Because he's all pervasive. I remember questioning young brahmachari, pondering on that. Maybe the acharyas have given some answers somewhere, and I wonder what they've said about it. that he can appear from anywhere at any time, however he likes, and go to wherever he likes, because he's all pervasive. It doesn't have to be this instead of that. Also, just like he can simultaneously be the bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. And for him, it's not, well, you know, for us, it's like, it's inconceivable. It's a contradiction of terms. You can be either big or small, but not both, simultaneously. But he can be big and small simultaneously. Smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest simultaneously. At the same time as human size, at the same time, all these other manifestations of him, because he has inconceivable potency. He's all-pervading. And that's exactly the leading, the connection between the reference to Sri Brahma Samhita chapter 5, where he, by his desire, one portion of him enters within every atom and so forth, in the halo of the universe, the language of the purport. And in this way, Krishna appeared. As he did like that, he appeared before Maharaj Pariksit. Just his desire. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, manifested in a suitable form, Paramatma feature, with four hands and symbols of Vishnu and golden helmet and lightning-like dhoti. It's not, we can't think of, like, was it cloth? It's not material. His helmet, his club, his various ornaments on his body, and the cloth that he's wearing, it's not something material. Yet at the same time, their descriptions of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, where Uddhava is said to have been so dear to Krishna that not only his features looked like Krishna and his bodily luster looked like Krishna, he would wear garments that Krishna wore. The same golden colored dhoti that Krishna wore, Uddhava would wear. When the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan saw Uddhava in Vrindavan, they thought it was Krishna. But then when they realized, oh, it's not Krishna, they weren't disappointed. They thought, he so much resembles Krishna. He reminds us of Krishna. He must be very dear to Krishna. And he's very dear to Krishna. To be continued. Any comments or questions?
Firstly, for Karnodak Sai Vishnu. Karnodak Sai Vishnu, from him Garbhodak Sai Vishnu, from him Kshirodak Sai Vishnu.
Well, but not exactly. Go ahead.
And here, firstly, Kshirodak Sai Vishnu, and then secondly, Garbhodak Sai Vishnu being told, I think.
Yeah, you're confused.
Yeah, yes, Maharaj.
Well, here's the good news. Take the microphone from him. The good news is those three Purushas are one entity. Their names are given according to function. And it's not a chronological sequence, like cause and effect, and then that effect becomes the cause of the next effect. They're eternal, and they may manifest just like this little question I raised of Shiradaksha, this ring back. Shiradaksha, can you fix the ring back? Shiradaksha Vishnu, appearing thumb size before Maharaj Parikshit. But at the same time, he's bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. He's within the atom, he's thumb size, he's bigger than the biggest, all at the same time. So, don't think of these things as material cause and effect, because they aren't. That takes care of the problem. So, sequentially they can appear, however, because they're one entity, and they're identified according to function. Okay? Anything else? Okay. We're done. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki. Yeah.